And welcome to Thursday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Jeff Fiegels. I'm Lance Beto. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. We will get you on the phones at 201-939-4513. You can also hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll tackle a lot over the next hour. Big news in terms of perhaps a trade for the Giants. Now, it's important to mention nothing is official from the Giants' perspective. Nothing can become official with any trades until the new league year starts on March 14th. But like you, we have certainly heard the rumors. We have seen the reports, and we're not going to shy away from at least addressing it and fielding your phone calls. But it's important to note, once again, nothing is official. It appears based on the reports, though, Jeff, that the Giants are going to be acquiring linebacker Alec Ogletree from the Rams, who was drafted in 2013 first round pick, and it appears that the Giants are going to give them two picks, a fourth and a sixth based on the reports, and then the Giants are also going to get a seventh rounder in 2019. And linebacker has been a position, Jeff, we've talked about for the last few seasons. They've been looking for that impactful player going back really since Antonio Pierce, somebody who you're familiar with, left the team. And you know, it's been a struggle. It's been a struggle to develop some of the young guys. John Beeson was acquired. He struggled to stay healthy. Ogletree is young. He's entering his prime. He's 26 years old. And what's interesting about him is, Jeff, the versatility, because he comes from a Ram system where he played inside and outside. They were initially a 4-3. Last season with Wade Phillips as the defensive coordinator, they moved to a 3-4.
Well, check all the boxes here, in my opinion. You check a box, number one. You ever see the most recent picture of his number 52? Has a C on his chest. The captain. That speaks volumes to me from a locker room that needs some leadership. And not only from at that position, but a guy that comes from a team that did pretty well last year, energized by that new coach that they have, and I think that that's a good thing. The other thing is that 3-4 defense. You got James Betcher in here, going to change that up. Very, very versatile. Can play, you know, puts his hand in the dirt and can play outside, inside, whatever you want him to do. Fast. And he seems to be a guy he's young. He's 26 years old. So our former first rounder. So are we, you know, when you look at the position, you're getting a guy that was drafted in the first round not too long ago, has become a captain quickly, very versatile, and you're giving up a fourth and a sixth, was it a fourth and a sixth rounder?
Correct. Based on the reports.
Reports, yeah. And I think when you look at the fourth and the sixth and the compensatory pick at a fourth rounder, really becomes a fifth round draft pick when it comes to the compensatory pick, not only the Giants, anybody for that matter. By the time you get it in the fourth round, it drops down to almost like a fifth round pick. I think it's a great pickup. I think that to answer your question, and I'm rambling on here, that they need help at that position. And really, when you look over the last couple, two or three years, that position has been decimated by injuries and guys that can't stay on the field and get some good cohesiveness amongst the group that's in there. So it's important that they get another guy like that and get him in there to play and have some leadership. I think it's a great move by the Giants. This goes to show you that they're starting to build.
Well, and you have to look at this from a value standpoint, Jeff, which is what you were alluding to. The fact that when it comes to the draft, and we talk about this all the time, it's an inexact science.
Totally.
You can know everything inside and outside about a player you're going to draft, but you still don't know to 100% certainty how the player is going to pan out. With Ogletree, do you know how it's going to work out with the Giants? No, but you can hang your hat on the fact that he's been in the NFL. He has stayed healthy for the most part. He's played at least 15 games in four of his first five seasons, and he's got a proven skill set, and he's young. He's still entering his prime. Versus a fourth rounder or a sixth rounder, let's say you hold on to those two picks, Jeff. You don't know what you're going to get out of late round picks. It's a guessing game for any team. It's not necessarily that any team has a specific edge. You're going to do your research. You're going to bring the player in. Is he going to make an impact in year one? Who knows? Is he going to make an impact and develop by year three? Who knows? I think the chances that Ogletree makes a more immediate impact on this team are much higher versus what you're going to get out of a fourth and a sixth rounder. And I think you have to look at a trade from that perspective.
Sure.
A lot of it is value, much more so than whether or not the name on the piece of paper appeases you.
Well, I think from the Rams standpoint, they're giving up a good player, but they have a good defense. And so if they're going to start compiling some picks over there because they have a good team, when you look from the Giants' perspective, they're a 3-13 team, a Giants defense that just was atrocious last year. And not only this, you get a guy to come in here to start. He's going to be a starter. Your draft pick at 4 and 6, you know, those guys are most likely are not going to be a starting player, and they're going to be special teams guys and backup guys.
If you get them to be a starter, it's icing on the cake.
Well, yeah, and that could be a year down the road, and you know, and maybe the guy comes in and impresses the coaching staff right off the bat, and there are people like, wow, I can't believe you dropped it a fourth round. You should have been a second rounder. Look at the way you're playing. But that's just a chance. The given is exactly what you said, Lance. You're getting a guy who's proven, he's been in the league, he's a veteran, and I'm telling you, I really love the fact that this guy was a captain on that Rams defense, which was one of the best defenses in the league last year. That means a lot to me coming into this locker room, because really, guys, when we look at what was going on in that locker room, some things got to change in there. And we talk about culture and all the buzzwords that go along with the inside the locker room. That'd be a great segment, wouldn't it? Inside the locker room. Who knows? Maybe we and I can do that.
Well,
one
listen, we can, you know, kick around some ideas. It's still the off season. Absolutely. Yes.
But where are you
going with that?
Yeah, you need that. You really do need this inside the locker room change, and I think he's one of the guys that can do it.
I remember a few years ago, Jeff, the Giants drafted pretty much all players that had the C on their jersey.
Yeah, remember?
Richburg
was one of the guys.
For one of the drafts, correct.
Yep. Yeah. And it'd be interesting to see how many of those C's are still on the team from that draft and when the Giants did it. So,
well, and related to that, remember, Jonathan Casillas, this was the other point that I wanted to bring up, why this trade is interesting. They have a lot of free agents at the linebacker position, Jeff.
Tons.
So there's no guarantee that all of those guys were going to return, such as a Jonathan Casillas, a Keenan Robinson, a Devon Kennard. Now, not all of them are inside linebackers, but it made up the nucleus of the starting core from last year. And Casillas, to your point, he had the C. Yeah. So if he doesn't return to the team, you have a void there at that linebacker position, and Ogletree could come in and fill that.
Yeah, and I don't know if I don't know if Ogletree was the guy that was making the calls, and he had the green dot on his helmet or not. I don't know, but the fact that he is a captain and he's played a lot of games, and you know, I remember I was impressed with him when the Giants played him this year, and we were doing our prep and stuff. He was one of the guys that we talked about on that defense for, and you know, they've traded some players this offseason. I mean, they get rid of the lineman. Went to UNC, the defensive lineman.
Yeah, I know. I'm drawing blanks, too. See, it must be something.
But they got rid
table.
Of him. They got rid of him. And then they get rid of Ogletree. So, you know, they're trying to stockpile.
Yeah, they made the trade with the Miami Dolphins.
Yes.
I'm going to bring up the name here in a second.
He is, because he played.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
UNC
for some reason,
I'm
drawing as many blanks as you are today.
Quinn.
Robert Quinn. That's mm-hmm. it. Yeah. They shipped him off to the Dolphins, and then they made the Ogletree deal.
So, a lot of good positive starts there, and you know, you don't see a lot of trades in the NFL these days, but I think for some reason, I don't know why, but just lately, the last year and a half, I think that they're coming a little bit more often than we've seen in the past. I mean, you talk about, I mean, seeing on the ticker all the time, like trade. Didn't used to see that at all.
Yeah.
There was no trades.
No, I think you bring up a good point. We saw it last offseason, too, when the new league year started. I think a lot of it, Jeff, is the rationale of what we were talking about earlier. If you could turn a late to mid-round draft pick into a proven commodity, why would you hesitate to do that if you're a league executive? I'd go with investing my money and my resources in a player that I think has a little bit more seasoning and polish already on them.
Yeah, and again,
I just think that makes much more sense.
And one thing, I don't know this, what it is, but obviously Ogletree's cap number in his contract would fit what the Giants need to do. So, you know, the cap's going up a little bit next year. And I think that it's, you know, last time I checked, it was $177 million.
Well, and it continually, like you said, I mean, it constantly goes up. So,
I mean, I came in the NFL, the cap might have been $7 million. I mean, it was unbelievable. Oh, my
Jade.
God, $177 yes. million. They got to spend it, too, by the way. That, you know, that's, they can't be sitting there. They got to spend it somehow.
Correct. It's not like baseball when you have the flexibility and you have a barometer. But once again, also, the contracts are going up.
Sure.
In connection to the salary cap.
Yeah. And so, listen, I don't want for one second of people to think that I'm, you know, I'm one of those ex players that believe that when I was playing and the money that I made and the contracts that we got, they were good. Okay, I'm not one of those disgruntled guys that sits back and says, I cannot believe that they're paying kickers $4 million a year now. You know, where was that when I – you know what? Come on. I'm not one of those types. It is what it is.
It was a reflection of the market.
And exactly. And I always tell people, I can't I didn't have a choice when I was born, right? Which, by the way, I was born 52 years ago yesterday. Just giving a shout out.
Happy
to my
belated
birthday.
Yes. Well, so, see, normally people don't want to reveal that information.
I don't care.
Shy away from that. Okay.
I mean, today, if you can't find out how old I am,
that's
you don't
true.
Know how to
it's
search.
Pretty much everywhere. Yeah.
And the fact that you know you're playing an era when it is, and that's just the way it is. So, you know, the cap goes up. So the cap goes up to that much money. The kickers and punters can make that much money. It's good. It's good stuff.
An optimistic viewpoint from Jeff Eagles.
And speaking about money, I mean, we're getting close to free agency time here soon. What is it? What's the date?
March 14th.
14th.
Start of the new league year. Yeah. Now,
they
could start talking a few days prior.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But the 14th is when they could officially sign on the dotted line.
Oh, yeah, the collusion day. Collusion, the non-tampering, whatever the hell they call it. What is it?
Well,
it's a tampering period.
Non-tampering. Well, everybody's got an old term for how they want to label it. But there are about a 2 or 3 day period in which you can at least talk with free agents. More so your own, but you can at least touch base.
And I've mentioned this before. There was an article by Greer. Or what's the guy's name? Albert Breer?
Albert Breer, yes, from Monday Morning Quarterback.
He wrote an amazing article on the tampering thing about how it's just how it goes on. You know, it even goes on during the season.
Well, I think everybody's in the business of trying to maybe bend a rule or two, but
please,
you hope that obviously it doesn't impact the market too much. To your point, though, about the trades, before we open up the phone lines, Jeff, at 201-939-4513, another trade occurred yesterday that also impacts the division as the Seahawks and the Eagles pulled off a trade, and Philadelphia is now going to add Michael Bennett, another pass rusher, to the mix with what they already have in terms of Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and Chris Long and plenty of other guys, Vinnie Curry. That's Jim Schwartz's M.O., just like the Giants did when they won the Super Bowl in 07.
Stock up.
Spags just love to rotate defensive personnel, and that's exactly what Philadelphia is following in terms of the script. But the reason why I bring that up, now the Giants, Dave Gettleman, seeing what he's going to have to contend with. And that's why the offensive line has been a focal point of his even before they made this trade. But when you see what other teams in your division are doing and the mindset that they have in terms of when you beef up the defensive line, you keep guys fresh, it's a big reason why Philadelphia was able to overcome some of the injuries they suffered. That's the way that you have sustained success over the course of a season, and it just puts more pressure on the Giants to make sure that they win the battle in the trenches this coming year.
Well, I think the first step is going to be in free agency with the offensive line. I think that we're going to know sooner or later what happens with Richburg and Pugh, because, you know, I looked at the top 100 free agents the other day, whoever had ranked them, and both Richburg and Pugh were, you know, they were both in the top 50. So they're either going to get re-signed here, excuse me, or but I think that, you know, the first order of business is going to be that offensive line, in my opinion. And then all of a sudden now you start to think about Eric Flowers, you start to think about John Jerry and Fluker and some of these other guys that are on, you know, basically on the Giants now.
Well, Fluker's a free agent too.
But they could, but you know, I'm saying they could maybe try to go to him and say, hey, you know, before free agency starts and you want to come back and whatever. But, you know, and listen, if Fluker's not a guy that's going to be this top, you know, day one, day two free agent guy.
In terms
of
setting the market.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, you got to look at those guys. And really, when you look at the way he played last year, I think that, you know, until after before he got hurt, I mean, it was just really had the running game flourish when he was in there. So you got to take a hard look at that, you know. And then, again, like I said, with Flowers, I think there's going to be open up a conversation about this maybe one day. Is it what do the Giants do with Flowers? You know, but we were talking about this before we came on the air, and I just think you got to give the guy a chance somewhere else at right tackle or guard or something. I mean, the guy's still going to be in his fourth year in the league, and I think he might be 24 years old and still on his rookie contract. He ain't going anywhere, folks. They're not cutting him.
There's value to having a player on a rookie contract.
There's no way. And Gettleman says you don't quit on talent, but as much as people think he may not have any talent.
Also, Pat Shermer said a fresh start for everybody. And that doesn't mean that a player is going to drastically change, but related to what you're bringing up, Jeff, Shermer and Gettleman's view of a player could be completely different than what the previous regime thought of. So you at least need to be open to giving the new coaching staff an opportunity to evaluate the talent before they ultimately decide what they want to do.
But I'll tell you, they got to get started on that offensive line for the fact what you just said about what the Eagles are doing, and they're stocking up on that offensive or the defensive line down there in South Jersey. They can go get his brother, too, because the Patriots just cut him. So
Martellus Bennett, yes, if they want to bolster the tight end position. But I think Zach Ertz is doing quite well. I don't know if there's enough room.
But they may lose
Trey Burden
in
free agency.
Yeah.
And Burden, don't overlook him. He was a key special teamer and a valuable piece of their offense as well. So they may need to replace somebody like that with maybe a Bennett reunion in Philadelphia. With that being said, let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Tim is in Jersey. He gets us going. Tim, what's happening?
Hi, Tim.
Hi, I have a question to you. After the Giants will likely cut Brandon Marshall after one season, and when the free agent begins on March 14th, the Giants will sign Sammy Watkins from the Rams to a one-year deal.
Well, Sammy Watkins is going to be a free agent from the Rams. They decided to give their franchise tag to LaMarcus Joyner, their safety, as opposed to Watkins, who was also in the mix. I think the Rams made the right decision. I mean, I'm sure if you're Sammy Watkins, you're looking for a longer deal and a longer offer than necessarily a one-year contract. So not that he's going to be guaranteed to receive it, but I don't know if a player like that, who is still relatively young, Jeff.
Still relatively young, but he gets hurt a lot.
Correct. Durability is a major question mark, and I'm sure the Rams are going to be interested in bringing him back. I mean, they did acquire him before the season started, and he didn't put up monster numbers, but he seemed to be a little bit more comfortable fitting in to what they were asking him to do in L.A. versus what the Buffalo Bills needed out of him, which was where he had to be the number one guy. With the Rams, because of the emergence of Robert Woods and Todd Gurley and some of the other guys they have, they didn't necessarily turn to Watkins and say, you have to do all the heavy lifting. He may be comfortable in accepting a shorter deal and staying in Los Angeles. I could see that happening.
It also could be one of those situations where the Rams tell Sammy Watkins, go ahead and see what you can get on the open market and then come back to us and we'll let you know if we'll match it or give you something a little bit better. That the Rams don't want to set his market value by going and giving him something early. So that's a lot of times that's how that free agency works.
Now, as far as Brandon Marshall, and Brandon Marshall is still under contract. I mean, Tim, who was on the line, was speculating about maybe the Giants will look to part ways with him. It wasn't a massive contract that they gave him to begin with. It was a two-year deal. And it depends on what direction they want to go with respect to this receiving core. I mean, Beckham's going to come back from injury. You still have Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, very much in the mix too. And I know he's a tight end, but he also plays like a wide receiver. And do they want to continue to groom the Roger Lewises and the Tavares Kings of the world? King is going to be a restricted free agent. Or do they feel that it's valuable in bringing back a veteran like Brandon Marshall? I mean, a lot depends on what Pat Shurmur's vision is and the roles he thinks this receiving core will take on. I mean, I could certainly see them having room for Brandon Marshall, and appreciate the phone call, Tim. Thanks so much for weighing
in.
But I could also see them saying we want to give a younger guy more reps and more opportunities next season.
I think they have to take a really good hard look at both of those players that you had mentioned, Roger Lewis and Tavares King, and just basically see, you know, what in their minds, what type of players they can or they are. And then, you know, maybe the Giants wouldn't be all that you know, maybe look to the draft to for a wide receiver
possibility
this year.
Yep.
I mean, I think that might be something that the Giants take a look at. You know, I mean, I don't think that this year's wide receiver class is all that deep in the fact that, you know, there are a tough couple good ones, but I don't think it's a very deep position in the draft this year, but who knows? But I think you got to find a number 3. You really do. And whether that number 3 is Ingram, you know, I don't know, cuz you're going to have there's a lot of talk. We got a lot to do here with Odell Beckham. You know, first of all, being on the field this year and what's going to happen with him, both from his health and the contract situation that's going to be before you know it. And then you got Sterling Shepard, who seems to me like he's hungry. He wants to come out and new coaching staff wants to impress the coach. And then who's your 3? You got to find that number 3.
I mean, the 3 could certainly be Ingram in terms of target-wise.
That's what I mean.
You could have Rhett Ellison take on a larger role as the tight end, who was relatively quiet last season. So, remember, he was with Shurmur in Minnesota. So maybe Shurmur envisions utilizing him more as a blocker slash receiver, and Ingram moves out more to a wide receiver.
I would
receiver.
Imagine they probably
possibility.
Use... Yeah, I mean, you probably use Rhett Ellison like he used him when he was there, you know? And then I think that Evan Ingram being your 3rd receiver, whether he's a tight end or I don't care if what you want to...
It's all about production.
What letters you put next
to
his name, I
mean,
could care less, but
correct.
I could definitely see him being your 3rd wide receiver. I mean, he's like legitimate receiver, but back to our point is they're going to need to find You know, that position, there's not a lot of depth with the Giants at that wide receiver position. There really isn't. I mean, you look at Travis Rudolph, the guy that, you know,
another young guy. Yeah. You know, and Darius Powell, who's been in and out.
But it does bring you back to what Tim was mentioning about Brandon Marshall. You know, and you had said it doesn't make a lot of money. So for the amount of money that they signed him for 2 years, it isn't huge to break the bank. But, you know, is he healthy enough to come back and be that third wide receiver? Because that's what he would probably have to be.
Yeah, and it also goes back to, you know, when you weigh the finances, what you just brought up, Jeff, if you don't think that the money you gain by perhaps moving on from him is going to give you somebody who has the veteran presence of him,
sure,
isn't it worth it to maybe just say, you know what, let's keep him on for one more year and let his contract expire?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they could also say to themselves, we want to look at free agency, and there are a few intriguing wide receivers that are going to be out there, but I think that they're going to cost a lot more than perhaps what you have Brandon Marshall on the books for currently.
Correct.
So you have to look at that from a financial perspective.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, I think that when all this starts on March 14th with free agency, I've been upstairs, and you can go into the personnel departments, and on a wall like this here, I mean, there is every player in the league that's a free agent, and they have them graded, and they're up on that wall, and this is the way they got them. And you know, the talking to Kenny Sternfeld, who is the pro personnel guy now, he told me that this year, that with Dave Gettleman coming in, they've changed up the way they grade players in the building. In years past, it was always done obviously one way. But they've changed it this year. So the grade levels and how they grade the players and their rankings and stuff is different this year than it has been in the past when Jerry was here and the other staff. It probably all means the same when it comes down to it.
Well, it's just Gettleman's jargon, his language.
Exactly.
Whatever he's used to.
But yeah, he was explaining to me how, you know, what the green dot, the red dot, yellow, you know, this kind of the way it is. And, man, a lot of players. So these guys know who the guys are, and they know the receivers. And can you find one that's out there that's comparable to Brandon Marshall? It's probably going to cost you some money, like you said. So you got to be comfortable.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Oren is in Virginia. Oren, what's happening?
Oren.
So how you guys doing today?
Doing all right, Oren. What do you got for us?
Oren,
you know what? You're breaking up. We're going to put you on hold. We're going to see maybe if we can work out the technical side of things. In the meantime, let's hear from Matt in Rhode Island. We'll look to get Oren back momentarily. Matt, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Real quick, if the Giants sign Sammy Watkins to any kind of contract, I'll give that caller who predicted the 1 year my season tickets for next season for free.
I happen to agree with you.
Zero chance of that happening this upcoming season. to the receiver point, I kind of think receivers are kind of, especially like a third receiver, is kind of a dime a dozen player.
Sure.
If they get their line intact and they stay healthy with the key guys, anybody can really kind of fit into that third receiver slot.
Right.
But I'm calling in today about the Ogletree trade. Maybe I'd missed something, but have the Giants definitively said they're moving to a 3-4?
Definitively, I don't know. I think it's probably just going from the fact that James Betcher, coming from Arizona, ran the 3-4 and being the defensive coordinator. Now, I had a chance to speak with James a little bit about that, and he told me, he said, Jeff, if you really go and look at our film, yeah, we are a 3-4 defense. But I'll tell you what, it's we're not 100% 3-4. I mean, we run 4-3. They run a 5-2. They run the 2. They're all kinds of different numbers. So definitively, probably not. They've probably haven't come out and said it. We don't know, but Betcher was a 3-4 guy in Arizona.
And they used the nickel package a lot too. I mean, if you look at how much the 3-4 base defense was on the field last season with Arizona, it was about 30% of the time. So, I mean, that may be his core, but that doesn't mean that you're going to have a 3-4 on the field in terms of your alignment for every single down.
Correct. The reason I'm asking is just doing some research on Ogletree. Last night, as best years of 4-3 weeks out linebacker. So I wasn't positive. This could be a year where the Giants maybe slowly transition to it. They show some 3-4 looks, some 4-3 looks. I think there probably won't be that true 3-4 defense this year. But kind of just to reiterate what you guys said, I don't think you could really complain as a Giants fan today about this trade. I mean, the fourth round pick was a compensation pick, the sixth round pick. He might as well be an undrafted free agent when you talk about the hit rate of those players.
Right, right.
And I think, Jeff, to your point, they need a voice there. Like, Snacks has been a reluctant leader there. JPP, Vernon, that's not really their thing. Really, besides Landon, they needed that kind of veteran voice in there to maybe kind of pull things together when things are tight. So, good first start. I will say this before I hang up. I almost crapped my pants, though, because when I was looking, I was on Twitter when I saw it, and all I saw was Giants trade, and I saw the number 2. And I said, holy crap, what just happened here? But, thank God it wasn't the second overall pick. But thanks for taking my call, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome.
All right, Matt. Appreciate the phone call.
Boy, and that number 2 pick sure is talked a lot about these days. You know, it's coveted.
I was talking about the minute they got the number 2 pick.
I mean, it's like, it's just, it's, and really to Dave Gettleman's credit, I mean, he's holding that thing pretty tight to his chest. You know, you're not going to want to let anything out of the building that's going to deter that thing, and you want to be under, you want to understand what you're doing. They know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. They're not telling anybody either.
Nor should you. Need to tell anybody.
Listen, I would tell you if Lance and I knew, then there's people who was going to know way before us. Trust me.
Yes, there would be a lot of chatter out there in terms of where we are on the totem pole in terms of the priorities. But
no, no question.
Yeah, but to your point, I mean, any executive, just like John Dorsey for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, where's Cleveland going with 1? Where's Cleveland going with 4? You know, he just came out recently. I know he said they're open to listening to offers.
Of course they are.
I mean, of course, anybody would say that they're open to listening to offers. He hasn't indicated what direction they're going in. I mean, granted, after the combine and Saquon Barkley's really impressive numbers in his showing, there's been a lot of chatter that Barkley could very well go number 1. But, I mean, that was hinted at, and that was in the conversation even before the combine. So I didn't really think that was a stunning development. And, once again, at 4, they could very well take a quarterback.
No, well, they can't. They definitely can take
a
quarterback.
So it's easy from Cleveland's perspective, in my opinion, Jeff, to say we go after who we think is maybe the best overall talent at number 1. Doesn't have to be a quarterback, and then we'll circle back down at 4, and we'll grab one of the guys, especially if 2 or 3 of them are basically on the same line on their board, and
which
there's not a huge differential.
Which it seems to be.
Then
yeah.
Why reach for it at number 1? Why not take the guy that you're more confident about in another position and get good value, and then
unless they seem to think that one of these quarterbacks, and most likely it's going to be the kid from USC.
Sam Darnold.
Darnold, excuse me. I don't know where the brain is today, but
well, he had a long birthday,
long
obviously.
Birthday
so
yesterday.
It's understandable.
Yeah,
yes.
Sure. But if they really believe that he's the guy and he's, you know, then they're going to take Sam Darnold, in my opinion. But don't be surprised if it's Saquon Barkley and then the Giants are sitting there with whatever quarterback they want to take, if that's their thing. But and really, when you think about the Cleveland Browns, if they really wanted one of those quarterbacks, they could swap up to go up to number 3 and swap with Indianapolis if they wanted to. Isn't it Indy 3?
Indy is 3. I don't think Indy wants a quarterback. I mean, that's just me
that's
speculating because
yeah.
You got Andrew Luck and you have Jacoby Brissett. You got 2 guys.
So that's a good. That would be a good move for them.
If they want to do that.
Because Cleveland has about 900 picks.
Correct. They've got a lot of picks and they've got a lot of money. But, you know, once again, for all we know, Cleveland goes out, signs A.J. McCarron. Okay, let's go with that hypothetical because
that's a great pick.
Hugh Jackson has a connection to him in Cincinnati. I can tell you're not a fan of AJ McCarron. Okay,
really?
Well,
I mean,
we'll
what
just go
AJ
with my
McCarron
hypothetical.
Done?
No, he doesn't have a great resume. To
yeah,
your point,
yeah.
But this is what I will argue. I will argue the reason why I would feel more comfortable investing in AJ McCarron than taking my chance with one of these draft picks is McCarron's been in the film room. There's a little bit more seasoning.
Okay, sure.
He's a little bit more of a veteran who understands NFL philosophy,
yeah.
NFL defenses, understands what it means to prepare. And, I mean, they did put him in the midst of a playoff game, and I thought he handled himself fairly well. So if a young guy could do that.
They did try to trade for him last year.
Well, that's more of a reason why I could see Cleveland going after him.
Yeah,
and that's why I brought him up as opposed to Kirk Cousins, who is certainly another viable option as well. But let's say they go out, they grab A.J. McCarron in free agency. Then I think it's more of a reason that you could wait at 4 for the quarterback. Because if you feel A.J. McCarron, who's still young, who's still entering his prime, could be your quarterback, you could still take a guy at 4 and groom him, but I don't think there's that urgency there, Jeff.
Or maybe
you
don't
need,
even take the
or
guy
maybe
at
you
four.
Don't even, because maybe DeShone Kizer, who you drafted last year, is the guy that you're comfortable with serving as A.J. McCarron's
and then
backup.
You get the number 1 player in the draft, it's Saquon Barkley, and at number 4, you could
get
a Chubb,
lineman,
Amika
defensive lineman.
You could get a safety, you could get a
you
heck of a player at 4. So now you got your quarterback that you think that you wanted to trade for last year, and it came down to the end moment and it couldn't happen. And then all of a sudden now you get the number one player in the draft, and number four, maybe you go out and get a guard. Maybe Quentin Nelson's the guy.
Correct, exactly. If he's still around there, yeah.
You know, and so it's just so intriguing about how, you know, but I really believe, and I know you're going to agree with me, March 14th will set the stage for the draft more than we're going to get closer and closer. Oh, yeah. As soon as free agency starts, we're going to know where Cousins goes. We're going to know where Teddy Bridgewater ends up. We're going to know where all these other quarterbacks are going to go, which is going to tell a lot of things about where the draft is going to go for some of these teams in the top 10.
Well, especially once we see the quarterback movement.
That's
I think will probably, as you mentioned, will have a far more impact on the draft than maybe any other position. I mean, there's going to be offensive linemen that are going to be signed. There's going to be running backs and wide receivers. But the quarterback, where the veterans go, I think could very well alter the direction and the aggressiveness, which is probably much more important, of some of these teams. For example, if John Elway gets a quarterback in free agency, then maybe they don't show as much urgency to move up to try to get a quarterback. And, you know, it depends on what happens with some of these other teams, like the Arizona Cardinals, who you could also argue may go after a veteran quarterback because they have a void with Carson Palmer retiring. That, to me, is going to change maybe some of the potential options that people were speculating about who would move up to want to grab the number two overall pick if they were still in the business of wanting a quarterback.
Right, and it could it be, you know, could it be a Dolphins that down like
Dolphins is another team, yeah.
You know, Denver, some of those other guys. So I think, yeah, the free agent quarterback market, once that's established, and I think Kirk Cousins is the big one, and we kind of know with four teams that, well, really I think it's down to two teams, in my opinion. It's going to be Minnesota.
The narrative tends to
Minnesota
change.
Minnesota or Denver, I think those are the two teams that are probably going to, right?
Well,
presence?
The Jets and the Cardinals were also in the mix, at least listed. But once again, I'm with you. Well, I've said it multiple times. He should go to Minnesota.
No question.
Minnesota is the ideal situation.
You got a win now attitude there. You're playing indoors.
Got great talent around you.
Good
coach. Good defense.
Yeah, I mean,
to me, it's a no-brainer as far as it. Now, Denver, I think, is a close second. I think the Broncos also have an environment where he could thrive because you do have Emmanuel Sanders, you have Demaryius Thomas. They've had a running game that's been able to have some success. The defense, I don't think, is as strong as Minnesota, but you certainly have some key weapons there. So Denver, you can sell me on Denver, but Minnesota right now is the big front runner.
And my only thing about Minnesota with Kirk Cousins, and it's not a big deal, it's really not, but it could be. I mean, listen, Pat Shurmur came from Minnesota, and he was calling the plays up there. Very successfully, and running with Case Keenum and doing all that stuff up there. I got to give a little bit of credit to Pat Shurmur and that offense up there. And you know, now that he's gone, you know, where does this go? You know, does the offense take a little bit of a step back, even though they're getting, you know, Kirk Cousins? And can Kirk Cousins play any better than Case Keenum did last year? I mean, Case Keenum played pretty darn well.
He did. He had a great season.
Okay, so I don't see Kirk Cousins being twice as better as he was. I mean, he had a really good season with Pat Shurmur. So, and then you look at Denver. I think I agree with you with the Denver. It's just, yeah, they got a, you know, good defense, but I like Minnesota's defense better. And I also like playing indoors.
Yeah, I think that's a big plus, too.
I really
correct,
do.
Especially when it gets pretty
have.
Frigid in mid in December. Yes, you can speak for that.
And it's a brand new stadium, too.
Yeah. So. Well, you bring up an interesting point about how much did Shurmur impact the production of Case Keenum versus the system or the environment. That's something that's fair to ask. I do feel good, though, if I'm the Vikings, that you brought in John DeFilippo, who comes over from a team and helping Carson Wentz develop and helping Nick Foles produce.
Redevelop.
So, correct. So you can't dismiss that. And John DeFilippo has been a previous offensive coordinator. It's not like this is his first opportunity. So when you take all that into consideration, you look at his track record, and to me, what's most appealing is, Jeff, Kirk Cousins, you know, is he going to be 10 times better than Case Keenum? No, I don't disagree with you there. Could he elevate it slightly? Yeah. I don't think that's a stretch.
Yeah.
Because the way that I look at Kirk is, Kirk Cousins put up 4,000 yards and at least 25 touchdowns each of the last three seasons as a starter.
Exactly.
Okay, but what jumped out to me this season, much more so than the previous 2 years, Jeff, is think about who you took away from Kirk Cousins. Okay, you took away Jordan Reed, right? He's barely on the field. Okay, you took away Terrell Pryor because Pryor barely played. Only wound up playing 9 games. He was put on IR. You took away Chris Thompson. the third down specialist, right? Right. You had injuries to Samaje Perine. He was in and out of the lineup. I mean, Capri Bibbs was his starting running back when we're talking about the last 16 weeks. He was brought off the street. You know, the defense was far from dominant last season for Washington. How many different offensive line arrangements did he have to play with? So when I see a guy able to put up consistent numbers when the players in the talent pool around him alters, that to me is a sign of a quarterback that can deal with adversity and handle those circumstances. Now I'm putting him in Minnesota, Jeff, okay? I'm assuming much more stability on the offensive line based on how the guy stayed healthy this year.
They redid their offensive line last year.
Correct. Yep. Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs, Kyle Rudolph, Dalvin Cook comes back from injury. Let's say you keep Latavius Murray, Jerick McKinnon could potentially leave in free agency, and a defense that has been stable. Now, people are going to point to, well, Minnesota's defense didn't do a good job against Philadelphia in the NFC Championship game. I'll give you that. But a defense is not defined by one bad performance.
Sure.
They have things they need to improve upon. They need to address the secondary a little. But that defense overall over the last few years since Mike Zimmer took over has been the poster child of consistency. Once again, that to me is a great environment based on what he was working with in D.C.
Yeah, and I think that Kirk Cousins has the ability to focus when he knows he's wanted. I mean, he's always been playing against the deck's been stacked against him over in Washington. You know, I mean, they just kept franchising him, and he wanted to get out of there. And, you know, just this is a whole new start for him is really going to be a good taste in his mouth, not to mention going to make $30 million a year. That's pretty good tasting as far as I'm concerned.
I think so, yes.
But I think that, you know, going in with that attitude and going in there with an idea that, okay, I belong here, they want me here, and now I'm going to just go out and just play football and not have to worry about this contract like I've been having to worry about it every year for the last 3 years. That drags on you, man. This is constantly – and don't get me wrong. I'm not feeling sorry for a guy that's been making $24, $25 million a year. But from a player's perspective, when you just don't feel like you kind of – you don't have that fuzzy, warm feeling that the team really wants you – and I think that that's, you heard it from D'Angelo Hall. He had said that, listen, we didn't think that Kirk Cousins really kind of wanted to be here, you know. And I think he's going to do well up there. I really do. I think that's where he's going. I mean, who knows?
I think once again, it seems as if they're a strong contender, but you know, with the way free agency works,
right,
developments change from day to day. But once again, I think Minnesota can make a very strong case that they can give him the environment where he can thrive, and they give him the money as well because all three of their quarterbacks are set to hit free agency. Let's head back to the lines, and we check in with Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's up, Lance? Hey, Steve. How's
it going? What's up,
all right,
my man?
Hey, not much. Got a question for you. Try to break this down as best as I can. Now, I heard earlier about your conversation in reference to Flowers. Now, if you move Flowers, I've heard different commentary about him moving to guard. Does he have the ability to drop his hips and give a stronger base in the middle to protect the middle so Eli doesn't have any, or any quarterback for that matter, has a rusher coming straight up?
I just think that he would benefit from having somebody on his right side and his left side. You know, after all the years he didn't have any help on the left side and we kind of saw how he performed, I think moving him inside where, you know, but even to the right tackle, which is more of his natural position, you know, I just think you can't quit on this guy, and that I think that he has a chance. He could be a guard. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's where they're going to try him.
Well, I don't know about guard. I
mean, why not?
Hey, I want him to try him anyway. He's a first-round pick. He's still got a little over $4 million left on the cap, you know, in his salary. Just try him.
Yeah,
but,
just try him. I mean, listen,
many
nothing,
times,
not to say that he might do it,
rushed.
But listen, I think that we kind of know where he's been under left tackle, and I think if they're going to go out and sign somebody, then you're going to have to find a place for him. Then you move him to right tackles. Okay, that's probably the most familiar spot. He's going to go from right to left or left to right.
Yeah.
Okay, and then maybe get some reps at guard and see how he does. Maybe he surprises some people. Like, holy smokes, this guy's really good.
Yeah, it's a new coaching staff. They may see something that the previous coaching staff did not. I think right now I look at it more as the value of the contract. He's on a rookie deal. Nobody should be in a rush to get rid of somebody like that.
$4 million this year on the cap?
Yeah,
is that what he's going to make?
It's not. Well, and here's the other thing. Half the teams in the league are struggling to put together a consistent starting unit. So now if you're going to tell me, if you have the luxury to take a starter from the previous season, if this is the direction they choose to go, and he becomes like that sixth, seventh offensive lineman, I mean, there are teams that are hard-pressed to find three guys that provide support for the starters, and now you're going to tell me you're going to move a starter to being that versatile guy that you can move around? I mean, there's a tremendous amount of value to that, in my opinion.
No question. And he's been a starter at left tackle for 3 years. He can still start there if you have an injury, and then you can move him. He can be a swing guy. He can go to the right tackle and then try him at some guard, and maybe he learns a couple plays at guard and whatever. So what else?
Next last comment is running back. With Goldman, and I'm already discounting Darkwell. I don't know why, but I don't think it's re-signing him, especially with the gems we have in the draft right now. But you may not agree with me, but even with Saquon Barkley ran between the tackles and dropped his head down to move for more yards, I'll be with you in reference to drafting him. But we need a battering ram, someone that's going to, you know, move the pile. So when you bring that change of pace back, you keep the defensive off kilter, because pretty much with Saquon, he has similar traits as Goldman and Perkins. So if we have either Chubb, I'd rather take Chubb, you know, put him on the goal line, or Geis, get him in the second round with their talents and their ability to move the pocket and not always look to bounce it outside and, you know, take what the defense is giving them. I think that'll give us a more dynamic look to our running game, even with, you know, depending on what changes we make on the offensive line. But I'll take an answer off the air. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Trey, appreciate the phone call. Thanks for weighing in.
You know, I think the sexy pick here is Saquon Barkley by all means. I mean, the guy, he checks every single box there is to be checked. Okay, he's got good character. He's gonna give you some just exciting football days. And I mean, really, no matter, I don't care what the offensive line is like, he's still gonna be dynamic. He's not gonna maybe be as good, but he's still gonna be dynamic. And the guy runs I just happened to pull his up 4.4, 41-inch vertical. All right, with the bench press, okay. But my whole 4.4 and a 41-inch vertical, the guy's going to hit the hole. And, you know, I mean.
You would hope, yes.
I would hope so. And I think that this, he's just so, it would be so much fun to watch him. And this is, you look at Adrian Peterson. They're comparing him to Adrian Peterson, you know, and you look at the career that Adrian Peterson has. He's had a pretty good career. I mean, the guy's rushed for 2,000 yards before. I think that it's one of those things where, it's just a matter of the philosophy. Again, it goes to where your philosophy is in the front office. We don't know it, but I would tell you, I wouldn't be mad at you if you drafted him. I think a lot of people would be with me.
Well, and there's also special teams value with him too.
Kickoff.
I mean, he was a great special teams player for Penn State. I think that's an appealing part of his game. The flip side of this conversation, I think, Jeff, is, and to the point that Dre brought up, if you do look at the current roster and you say Wayne Goldman, Paul Perkins, okay, if Orleans Darkwood doesn't come back, the necessity of maybe having a proven veteran in the backfield to help balance things out. How much of a priority is that? If you're a coach, if you're Dave Gettleman, or do you say, you know what, Saquon Barkley or one of these other young guys like a Chubb is talented, and who cares if we have three relatively young backs there? It doesn't matter. I'm just throwing that out as perhaps part of the rationale. Well, we've got two young guys that we're grooming in Goldman and Perkins. Now do you need to offset that with a veteran?
If it's me, I'm okay with the three young guys.
You're okay with the youth movement.
Because it's a young league. And where of all positions can I go out and find me a veteran player? It's a running back position. I can go find me a running back after training camp, because they don't want to be in training camp anyway. And if I feel like I need a veteran running back, I'll go find me one, you know. Maybe it's an Orleans Darkwell who doesn't get signed by another team and he's just sitting out there waiting. I don't know. But I think that I would be okay with the young guys, because I think Wayne Gallman showed me a little bit towards the end of the season. He needs to protect the football a little bit more. I think Perkins got a little bit embarrassed with McAdoo making him the starter at the beginning of the season. Then he loses his job.
And then he got hurt too,
and
which
he got
didn't
hurt.
Help
so,
either.
I mean,
yeah.
So there's a little bit of a, you know, kind of a guy that wants to be re-energized with this new coaching staff and things like that. So there could be a good battle there. And, and if Saquon Barkley comes in, I'm certainly not, those two guys are not leaving. They're gonna be on the roster. They're good special teams guys. So I think I'm okay with the young guys. Answer your question.
All right, let's head back to the phone line. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shake, what's happening, Shakes?
What's going on, fellas?
How you doing, Shakes?
Shakes.
All right, man. Listen, if
5 years ago, I called up this show.
Come on. 5 years ago, yeah. Shakes? Come on.
5 years ago, I called up on this show for the first time because I wanted to let the people know and to have a voice to point this guy out because I wanted this guy to be a Giant so bad. Alec Ogletree.
Oh, there you go. Well, you got him now. They're a little late.
And 5 years later, on my fifth year anniversary of knowing this show, not you, Jeff Figures.
That was not 5 years ago.
Yeah, but, yes. But yeah, 5 years ago, I went and I pounded the table for Alec Ogletree. And on my anniversary, I got him.
See?
How beautiful
that.
Patience is a virtue. Yes.
So let me ask you a question, Shakes. What do you like most, okay? Don't give me a bunch of a soup. What do you like most about Ogletree? Give me your top two things you liked about him.
Oh, man, I can give you so much.
No, that's why I said don't give me all of them. I just said just give me two.
I think you opened up Pandora's box, Jeff. We all thank you for that.
He's a leader.
There you go.
Vocally and on the field. He is a leader. And the second thing is speed over everything, baby.
Go.
He has been one of the fastest linebackers in the league since he's been here. And I told y'all 5 years ago that this was going to be the new prototypical linebacker, and ain't nobody listen. And I said, jump on it. But we drafted Pugh. And I came on it, and Jeff, please, if you want to laugh, go back to that 2013 draft. With BBK, they did a show on the draft. It should be there. Go to that episode and listen to what I said to P. Dot. I was so mad that we passed up on Ogletree. I said, "What are we allergic to linebackers or something?"
Yeah, they
this
were.
Is unbelievable.
Well, the Giants haven't drafted one of the first rounds since '82.
Yeah,
so
I am so happy. I'm ecstatic. Now I wanted to talk about one other thing, and then I'll take it off. But the number one pick. Now I hear you with the AJ McCarron thing, because don't get me wrong, he could turn out to be another Garoppolo.
84, you know what I'm saying? Sorry, 82 was Taylor. You know, no, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Carl Banks was 84. I'm sorry. Continue.
Yeah. So he could be another Garoppolo, but to me, Cleveland cannot keep on taking these chances. They have to sit there and draft number one overall, their quarterback. They cannot keep on bringing this and these type of quarterbacks to the fans and saying, look, we're trying to win.
Well, they could bring
How
in a free agent, though, Shakes.
And you're number one in the draft every single season.
Yeah, but, Shakes, they could go. They could bring in a free agent.
On quarterback.
But, Shakes.
They could have had Carson Wentz, and look at him.
Shakes, to your
you
point.
They can't keep doing it.
Well, Shakes, but they could address the quarterback position in free agency. Which,
I understand what you're
so,
saying.
So, I mean, I don't think that's a stretch. And it's not like they haven't.
You cannot present that to them. And I'm sorry to cut you off, Lance, but you cannot present that to the fans, man. You can't keep doing it.
No, but why can't. Wait a minute. Why can't. Hold on. Why can't you present to the fans AJ McCarron as a signing in free agency? Why can't you do that?
Because that is not enough, bro.
But what's the difference?
They want a franchise quarterback.
And how do you know? Wait a minute. Shakes. 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 Hold on. Shakes. Shakes. How do you know? Shakes. Shakes. How do you know? Shakes. 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 How do you know? Shakes. How do you know that any of these quarterbacks are franchise quarterbacks? How do you know that?
I don't believe one of them is.
Well, but you don't know. But you can't. But you can present it to the fans, and it's still not 100% certainty. Is my point. So there's a lot of unknown in whatever direction.
Yeah, it's an unknown, but you
can't tell me that if you pick a quarterback number one, he's definitely going to pan out.
But you keep on trading the second overall pick and keep on poop-pooping on these quarterbacks, and the fans is looking at the quarterbacks that y'all poop-pooping on, and they shining, and they like, come on, and we're still losing. No, you cannot keep doing this, Lance. I'm telling you. I don't think
it's crazy for them to go out and get a free agent.
Fans, Lance. It is a disjudgment or this. I don't even know the word right now. But I'm telling you, it can't go down that way.
All right.
But thanks for taking my call, y'all.
All right, Jake. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks for weighing in. I mean, here's the other thing to look at it. He was referring to the year that they traded with the Eagles, and the Eagles got Carson Wentz. And then last year, you could have made the argument they could have got Deshaun Watson and wound up moving down and missed out on him. But what's important to note is when a quarterback thrives, Jeff, with one team, does not mean that if you take that quarterback and you move him to Cleveland,
he would have thrived there.
It would have happened. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think Carson Wentz could be a good quarterback elsewhere.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that I don't think Deshaun Watson could be a quarterback elsewhere. But part of it is the system, the coaching. You can't just dismiss that had no impact on the development of those two young quarterbacks. So when we say Cleveland, oh my God, here we go again, they passed on a young quarterback. Yeah, that quarterback has thrived with the team that he was selected for. But that doesn't mean that if you put Carson Wentz in Cleveland all of a sudden is winning the division and they're going to the playoffs.
Yeah, look what Cleveland did to their offensive line. They started trading away everybody.
Yeah, so, and I now mean, Joe they, Thomas they may retire.
And they decimated that whole offensive line. I mean, so even if Carson Wentz was in Cleveland with no offensive line, what would have happened? You don't know. So I think that collectively you got to look at it, the bigger picture is that what are you doing with your team other than the quarterback position? Then if you did get a franchise guy, do you have enough around him to make him to be that guy? But I don't think that – I think Cleveland's got a long ways to go, first of all. I just don't think that they're a very well-coached football team, and I think that they're – and I see what Shakes is saying. He's basically saying we can't keep giving this to the fans that we're gonna trade away our pick or we're gonna go the opposite way and get a free agent like AJ McCarron and try to sell that and throw it down your throat. But to your point, what if the guy is a proven player, but more than these other guys? You don't know if they're going to be a franchise quarterback. You have
it's a guessing game. I mean, people are going to tell me that, well, the higher you pick a quarterback, the more likely the quarterback pans out. And that's fine. I'm not going to disagree with that if you go based on history. But you still don't know. And don't tell me Cleveland, they've drafted guys.
Sure.
With the high pick. Couch come to mind and some of these other guys? And how did that turn out? So they've used high draft picks on quarterbacks, and they're still 20 years later still looking for the quarterback. So that's why I'm saying Cleveland can't be of the mindset if you're John Dorsey. We've got the number one pick. We have to take a quarterback. If he feels the free agent is more likely to pan out, then he's going to go out and he's going to spend money. And McCarron is not going to cost as much money as Kirk Cousins. Because Kirk Cousins has a much more appealing resume.
AJ McCarron might cost half as
correct,
much.
Correct, exactly.
As
so that would be a reasonable deal if you went out, Jeff, you signed AJ McCarron to, I don't know, $15-16 million a year. You're not giving him 30. He has experience, and you figure you're going to put talent around him to thrive, and he's got familiarity with Hugh Jackson.
And he also went out and got two of the best four picks in the draft.
Yeah, at completely other positions than the quarterback, let's say, assuming they do what you were talking about earlier.
Like I said,
they could have an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman.
You could have the number one running back and perhaps the number one player in the draft.
Yep.
And then the number one – a lot of people think that Quentin Nelson could possibly be the other best player in the draft, being aside from Saquon Barkley. They really could get those two best. I mean, listen, I'm not going to – Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen and Josh Allen, those guys are not the best players in the draft. We know that. Saquon Barkley is by far the best player in the draft. He's the best player, and there's no question about it. From another standpoint, I think that when you look at Nelson, I think that, you know, that's a guy that you could argue is even though he's not a quarterback, he's still – He's such a better player from the ranking standpoint than these other guys. I mean, Sam Darnold, these guys didn't have great seasons last year in college football. They checked the boxes as far as arm strength and height and
but there's
you know,
still question marks connected to them. Yeah,
every single one of them has a question mark. I don't see much of a question mark in Saquon Barkley. Okay, no question marks there. Character, hardworking, you know, you name it. Then you got Quentin Nelson, who the guy is, he's 325 pounds and he's 6 foot, what, six or something? He's huge.
Yeah. You feel good about their skill sets translating much more so than maybe saying that the quarterback is going to be guaranteed. And I've said this multiple times, Jeff, I like Baker Mayfield. So if I could wait to draft Baker Mayfield, and I know his stock is on the rise, I'd feel fine doing that instead of banking on taking one of those other guys at number one and thinking all of a sudden that my issues are going to be solved. Because I like what you laid out. If you tell me McCarron, Barkley, Nelson – with the pieces they already drafted from last year. You got Njoku at tight end. Let's say you bring back Josh Gordon. He's a restricted free agent. Corey Coleman. You know, those guys stay healthy. You're building a nice nucleus, at least on paper.
And not only that, you look at the Browns' defense was not bad last year.
Oh, it was a very respectable unit.
Okay, so, you know, and maybe that fourth pick is not a Quentin Nelson. Maybe that fourth pick is,
Chubb. And you combine him with Myles Garrett, who you picked last year. Now you got two legitimate pass rushers on both sides. No, to me, that is more appealing because I feel as if that's going to translate in year one, much more so than putting a young quarterback under center and keeping your fingers crossed and hoping for the best.
And again, what Shakes is saying is that here, you know, if we do this, you know, we're never going to get that franchise quarterback because you continue to not give it a chance. Well, I if you're a Cleveland Browns fan and you Sam Darnold's your guy, okay? You picked him and now everybody's happy. Oh, we finally did it and this and that. Aren't you going to be watching those games on Sunday with a little bit of kind of, well, I know we got Sam Darnold, but he's not, you know, he's not Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning or Eli Manning coming out of college. I would feel like I still don't feel really great about this. Now, if I'm sitting here with Saquon Barkley, I got a better taste in my mouth that this guy's going to be a stud now. I mean, hand him the first play of the season, I'm giving him the ball. Here you go. Sam Darnold, I don't know. I don't get excited about it. I get excited about Saquon Barkley.
Well, I agree with you. I think if you presented that to the Cleveland fan base, I'd find McCarron and Barkley as a combo much more appealing than any of these young quarterbacks all alone on their own.
And I think that a lot of times, just like in anything, it's all in a delivery. So if I deliver A.J. McCarron to you in a way behind it, I have a reason, then I think it's easier to appeal to swallow for the fans. Okay, listen, this is why we're doing this. Not just we go out and sign A.J. McCarron and then don't say anything about it. There's got to be a plan.
No, you lay out the game plan. Correct.
No question.
And part of it is the appeal of grabbing other players in the draft at other prime positions. Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Jason in Denmark. Jason, what's happening?
Hey, Jason.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, Lance? What's going on, Jeff?
Doing all right, Jason. What do you got for us?
Is this real Denmark?
Yeah,
is this
I'm telling y'all. This is
yes, this
Denmark.
Is legitimate Denmark. Jason
like,
has called
it
before.
Denmark,
yeah.
New Jersey?
No, he's not putting an act on.
No, well,
this is a legitimate Denmark phone call.
I'm officially from New York, but I live in Denmark now.
Wow, that's awesome. What time is it there, by the way?
It's 7 o'clock.
7 p.m.
Oh, nice evening showing of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Look at that. Dinner and Giants talk. Doesn't get better than that. So what do you got for us, Jason?
Yeah. Well, I'm telling y'all, we're going to get Barkley because I've been cutting chicken heads and throwing bones and rusty pails, and I'm telling you, the voodoo gods are saying we're getting Barkley.
Okay. All right.
Real talk, though, my real question is there was some conversation, rumor, if you want to call it that, about us looking at Prince, Mukamura, bringing him back. I wondered what do y'all think if we did take that chance and do that? And then I also wondered if you all knew, we have a history of releasing players and then bringing them back. How's that worked for us over the years? As far as I know, we brought Ross back at one time. Of course, we brought Blackburn back. That worked really well for us for the Super Bowl.
Brandon Jacobs.
How does that work for us when we do release a player? I know it saves money, but what's the percent of positives did we get from doing that?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
if you look at the players you had just mentioned, not very good. I mean, if Ross came back, he continued to get hurt, I remember. Brandon Jacobs was another guy that the Giants brought back, if you remember.
And that was more because they were so decimated by injuries at that position, much more so than they figured he was going to make an impact.
I think of all the guys, I mean, Chase Blackburn might have been your best one ever because he came back and
he came back in the middle of the season and picked off Aaron Rodgers,
the
way. Yeah. And that helped because he knew the system. So,
So I think that in the way that they bring these players back, it's not I think it's more of a either – you know, you need some help from depth-wise, but I don't think you bring a guy back like this to become a starter.
Yeah, but to your point, Jason, I mean, Prince Amukamara, who, by the way, actually had a very productive season in Chicago.
Yeah.
If you look at the numbers, you're bringing him in. If you bring him in, Jeff, you're bringing him in to essentially be the fourth corner.
No question.
So, I mean, I don't think that's a harmful signing if the numbers are right and he wants to come back and there's value to that. But, you know, again, I don't know a guy like Prince at this point in his career. Is he content with a fourth cornerback position or does he feel he could sign somewhere where he could compete to be a starter?
Well, the market's going to tell you right away within the first two or three days what your market value is worth and then you can make a decision from there.
Right, right. Hey, did P-Dot take a day off because we lost some picks over that trade?
I haven't talked to P-Dot about that. No, I don't know necessarily if he needed a recovery day as a result of the picks, but he'll be back tomorrow, so you could ask him that, Jason, if you want to call back in on back-to-back days. Or I will ask him, and I will pass that on.
I've been listening every day. I've just been working nights, so I haven't been able to call, but I've been listening every day religiously to your show. Love this show.
Well, we appreciate that.
It gives me
that's
a little
great. We are representing
New York Denmark. All the way here in Denmark.
I love it.
Sounds
Thank you.
Good. Well, thanks so much for weighing in,
Jason.
And thanks for tuning in. Appreciate the phone call. How about we go from Denmark now back to New York. Jay's in Brooklyn. Jay, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Jeff, how you guys doing, man?
Good, right, Jay.
Hey,
what do you got for
Lance,
us?
But this is a question for both of you, but I know you, Lance, you cover the NFL and, all over the league. I read yesterday after the Ogletree trade, which is a great trade, I think, by the way, that the Giants now have like 50% of their cap dedicated to seven players. Is that like normal around the league?
Well, I don't know what the percentage is across the league. I mean, it's a fair question. I could tell you there's some teams, though, that have given out some massive contracts. For example, I mean, the Miami Dolphins, the amount of money they gave Ndamukong Suh, they're now determining whether or not they want to part ways with him to give themselves some more cap space. I mean, off the top of my head, I can't give you a percentage of how many teams may have about 50% of their cap bottled up with seven players, but I don't think that is a unique circumstance if you go over the last 5 years in terms of teams spending a lot of money on specific positions.
Yeah, it's just telling me a couple of things. I think, everybody's worried. Gettleman's got a lot on his plate, of course, with the draft alone. But, I mean, when you look at what he's trying to do with the team, with Odell coming up for a contract, Landon Collins coming up for a contract, trying to sign an offensive guard, and then already having that much money allocated to seven players, it just gives you an idea of exactly what he's working with and the job he has ahead of him. I think people would take it for granted how hard of a job he has coming up.
He has a lot to work, and really going forward from here on out, you're going to have some players on the team. They're going to be June 1st casualties, we call it. They're going to cut them after June 1st to save some money on the cap. They're also going to reduce some contracts. I mean, some guys are, guys are redoing their contracts all the time to try to save some money. And so I think that's if you are one of those teams in the Giants, I'm not saying they are or they aren't. If they're at 50% with those seven players, you got to try to get some money. So now that maybe that goes down to 35% or to those seven players, and the other 65 is towards the rest of the roster.
Well, and that's also, to your point, Jay, why the draft is so important. Because if you don't have the flexibility to go on a spending spree, and most teams shouldn't want to do that, because when was the last time the team that, quote-unquote, won free agency wound up actually translating that to
Very
a Super
rarely.
Bowl? So you need to have young guys on your roster that are going to make an impact. I mean, all you need to do is look at Philadelphia. There's a reason why the Eagles, and I keep bringing up as an example, it may pain Giants fans, but the truth is they deserve a lot of credit in terms of how they built up their team and all the injuries they suffered. The young players rose up and filled the void. And when you can rely on that and you could do that, then you don't have to worry about if you're a GM, we don't have a lot of money to go out and spend. If your third-round pick from 2 years ago can be a starter, it's one less thing you got to worry about.
And they've done well in free agency.
They have, too.
The Eagles have done
yes.
real well in free yep. agency. I mean, they go out and they get LeGarrette Blount, okay? So we all thought that he was going to come
Gave
here
him a one-year
year.
Deal.
Yep, exactly. Show me deal. And then what do they do during the season? They go out and get a giant from
Correct. They
Miami.
Traded for him. Yep.
So, I mean, they make good decisions. But in the meantime, like you said, when they do have injuries, they have depth from the building through the draft and building the team in the right way.
And I'll give you one more. They signed Stefan Wisniewski.
Yes.
Who, by the way, is not a household name. He was a journeyman, was with the Oakland Raiders, played center, played guard. They brought him in, and he became a big cornerstone of that offensive line this year. So there's another example of – and he wasn't a guy that they went out and spent a million gazillion dollars on.
And I think that
respectable
Gettleman,
deal.
Gettleman has a reputation of being that kind of guy that can go out and find players like that. And that's what he did over in Carolina. He goes out and finds some of these players, and, they're not main – they're just kind of household – you don't know about them. And they come in and boom, they turn around. And I think that what Pat Shurmur did and those guys and the Vikings did up in Minnesota last year, they rebuilt their offensive line with a couple key acquisitions in free agency and through the draft and things like that. I think the MO is there for this year coming up. I think he's going to be asked to do the same thing.
Yeah.
They're going to have to do the same thing, and it can happen. It can happen. You wish they had a little bit more money, but I think that they're going to free up, to your point, I think they're going to need to go and do some restructuring of some of these contracts.
What else you got, Jay?
Yeah, I think that's what it's telling me. I'm just looking at the situation. I mean, you got to figure with that much money allocated to that few of players that there's got to be some surprise cuts. I'm not talking about, you know, a kick returner or a starting wide receiver that didn't work out.
No, a surprise cut would be like a JPP or something like that.
One of those seven guys is going to be cut this offseason.
Well, if they're not willing to take a pay cut, they will be.
But remember, somebody like that doesn't come cheap off the books. There's cap hits. There's
dead
money.
Is crazy.
Yeah, so it's not so easy to say, oh, let's get rid of him, and then he's just wiped away from the books. There's still going to be some carryover, especially when you take into consideration the guaranteed money.
It takes two. It takes two there. It really does. It has to, both the team and the player have to be on the same page. They got to be willing to give a little bit from both sides to get something like that done.
Absolutely. Jay, appreciate the phone call.
Yeah,
you got
you,
it. Thanks so much for weighing in. All right, let's hear from Scott in New Mexico. Scott, what's happening?
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hey, Scott. What do you got for us?
Question for you. Well, first a comment. I think the acquisition of Ogletree was a steal for the Giants. He's a tremendous player. I think he had like 94, 95 tackles per every year he played. I know he was hurt in 2015, but he's a stellar athlete, so I'm glad they did that. My question relates to how he integrates into the current linebacking core. Because I had four players that I think the Giants should retain for the linebackers. That was B.J. Goodson, Calvin Munson, Devin Kennard, if they can sign him, and Kelvin Shepard. I don't know if they'll have Herzlick back or Keaton Robinson or even Jonathan Casillas because I don't know what's left in his tank. But based on the current plan of going to a 3-4 and having Ogletree, I know the Giants, I think, ranked last in the league in quarterback pressures. I think they're at 7.5%. So does this can they use in the 3-4, the linebackers are also the core ingredient. Are those four linebackers ones you would agree should be retained, or do you think they'll look for somebody else in the draft or in free agency? And I'll take the question off the air.
All right, Scott. Appreciate the phone call. Well, he threw out a lot of inside linebackers. Well, B.J. Goodson's still on a rookie deal, and you hope he stays healthy because that's what really held him back this season after a promising start. He named, though, a lot of inside linebackers, Jeff, and if you want to have four guys on the field, you want to have some guys that you can put on the outside. Kennard can play on the outside, but, I mean, if you have Kelvin Shepard, you have Ogletree, and you have B.J. Goodson, you know, Shepard and Goodson are both inside linebackers. And now Ogletree started on the weak side early in his career, and then when James Laurinaitis left from the Rams, they moved him to the inside. So, I mean, there's versatility there, but I would think his strength now is you want to keep him inside. So there's not a great deal of balance based on what Scott threw out there in terms of if you return that nucleus of four.
And I think some of the names you mentioned there, they played on the Giants last year because out of need.
Absolutely,
I mean,
because of injuries.
Calvin Munson was a street free agent, for God's sakes. You know, so, but he played well. I mean, he played good enough.
And those are good depth guys.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, but I think that the Giants are going to be very aggressive going out there in free agency and through the draft trying to find some linebackers.
I mean, I think if you look at the group of free agent linebackers, Kennard to me has the most upside. And a lot of it has to do with because he's young and perhaps they can utilize his versatility
because he can move down. Yep.
So maybe that's intriguing to Betcher. Everybody else that's due to be a free agent, you know, Casillas is a proven veteran leader. You know, if they want to bring him back to play on the outside, I mean, it's certainly a possibility. Keenan Robinson's been up and down in terms of injuries during the course of his career, and he's an inside guy. Ogletree could play there. You know, I think, once again, Kennard to me is the most appealing of the group.
And he wants to come back. I heard him talking, but he also wants to see, he wants to test the market and see what he's worth. But as far as from a feasibility standpoint, he would definitely be the guy that you could say, okay, yeah, I can put his hand in the dirt. He can play outside. He can play a little bit inside. Whatever you want him to do, he could do it. There's not a lot when I'm looking at that roster that makes me excited about the linebacker crew. I think there's a lot of work to be done there. And it's going to have to be through free agency in the draft, no question. And I think you'll see it.
Well, from a numbers game, there's work to be done because these guys are not even guaranteed to return. A lot of them are not under contract. Yeah. So it certainly should set up for a revamping of that unit. But I think the nucleus of Goodson and Ogletree on the inside, at least early in the offseason, is a positive because you have two young guys. And as long as they can stay healthy, I think that could create a nice 1-2 punch in the center.
Those are your two starters right away. Then you got to find three or four more because you need
for
a couple
depth,
more.
And then you got to now focus on the outside to complement the guys that you figure you're going to lean on the inside. All right, that is going to wrap up the latest edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Certainly appreciate all the phone calls, all the tweets. We will try to address some of your tweets off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live is up and running again tomorrow, Friday, at noon Eastern. For Jeff Eagles, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.